Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Chip Patterson here, Barton Simmons there. We are rolling right along, recording here on a Wednesday. We've got the Big 12 Media Days are going on in Dallas. The Big 12 is our focus for today. And Barton, man, this is a conference as we begin to sit down and look at the 2017 season ahead. Just a review for those fans who might have been living under Les Rocks. Like, this is an entirely new Big 12. We already had a new era with the expansion, with the change in the membership, but the league goes as Texas and Oklahoma go. We got Tom Herman replacing Charlie Strong at Texas. This is a huge year for the coach who already won us over with his grills, his ice, and everything else he did at Houston. But then Bob Stoops steps down in the spring, Lincoln Riley promoted. We've already done the ACC and we've already done the SEC. I would say in terms of intrigue, the Big 12, and then maybe I would only say the Pac-12, which we're going to get to here in the next couple weeks. I would say this is probably where the most intrigue is in college football this fall.
Yeah, man. And this is, I mean, for so long, the Big 12 has been everybody's punching bag. And you know, talk about, it's sort of the clear fifth conference, and they haven't had success in the college football playoffs. And Oklahoma is really the only saving grace. Texas is down, all this stuff. And we got yet another conference commissioner through all this saying that he's the head of the best conference in college football. Bob Bowlesby called the Big 12 the best conference top to bottom. So, but here we are, and the season's coming up. And, you know, Chip, to me, the Big 12 is in some ways got a chance to be back. Like, I think I ranked I kind of took all these conference commissioners talking about their conferences being the best in the country, and I went ahead and did a rank and wrote a story talking about, you know, how I slotted the conferences heading into this year, like projecting it out. And to me, the Big 12 was third. Mm. Like, I don't know if that's crazy to say that, but I mean, we'll talk team by team, but everybody in the Big 12, I feel like, is going to be improved this year. I just think that this is a conference that gets a bad rap or has gotten a bad rap. And as you kind of alluded to, it's really about, you know, where's Texas? I mean, Oklahoma's done their part, and with only 10 teams, if you only have one real contender, you're going to struggle a little bit. But if Texas can up their game, and Lord knows, look, if the media pundits know anything, then Tom Herman better be a heck of a coach, because we've all been touting his horn for so long. So if Texas can do anything, then to me, the Big 12's got a chance to be really, really good.
When Charlie Strong was at Texas, in your view, so Malik Jefferson, like stellar quarterback, Shane Buechele, like highly rated prospect. I mean, top to bottom, was Texas's recruiting hurt by their inability to match some of the expectations of the Texas fan base on the field?
Well, they've been recruiting at such a high level, and they're still that's one of the reasons why. I think we'll talk. So when Tom Herman took the Texas job, I really think he was stepping into a situation. Like, let's look at it this way. Like, to you, given the Texas roster, given the Texas history over the last 5 years or so of success or lack thereof, and then given what say Lincoln Riley's stepping into, who has the better situation to you?
Lincoln Riley.
See, I would argue that maybe it's even Tom Herman that has the better situation, and not to say that Texas is going to be better than Oklahoma this year, but Lincoln Riley has to sustain all that success that Bob Stoops has put together. He's got to do it in what I think is a uptrending Big 12. He's got to do it with a coaching staff that he inherited. And meanwhile, at Texas, you've got Tom Herman stepping into a situation where he's got his entire staff at Houston that he's bringing with him for the most part. Guys that he's comfortable with, he's won with before. He's got a really, really talented roster. And
well,
he's
got,
also
and he's
has,
also got the resources, man. Like, that's what I will let me backtrack a little bit. Like, I think Lincoln Riley is definitely better suited now, but man, there is a component of Tom Herman where I think he is going to find both, because, like, man, Texas has been a little bit of a mess at the administrative level, you know, like with athletic directors, with presidents, you've been changing people in and out. Mike Perrin seems to be someone who everyone around Austin is very confident with. And like, we've seen, like from the sports business side, you know, I see these beer deals with Corona and everybody laughs. And let me tell you, horns up, limes in is one of the best catchphrases that I've heard in a long time. But like, what I'm also seeing is investment. Like, I am seeing like real smart investment, marketing, branding, the kind of stuff where you're going to be able to turn the Longhorn football brand into a machine again, where Tom Herman can be its CEO. Like, there is, like, sky is the limit. I don't know if Tom Herman will win national championships at Texas, but he is going to have every opportunity to.
Well, and there's buy-in too. I think that's huge. I mean, because when you look at the way the Mac Brown era ended, there was all sort of discord and disagreement over how it should end. Should we be pushing Mac Brown out? Should he be able to leave on his own terms? Then Charlie Strong comes, and I don't think he was a universally accepted hire. He never really endeared himself to the people of Texas quite the way that, frankly, Tom Herman has. I mean, that was a unanimous, this is the guy, no question.
Yep.
If we don't get Tom Herman, it's a failure. They got Tom Herman. So I think he has an opportunity to bring the family together. Everyone wants to come together. They want to have this reunion. And look, if he gets 9 wins, he's a savior. He's a hero. To that Lincoln Riley comparison, if Lincoln Riley gets 9 wins, that's a disappointment. And
right.
So I just think in some ways, as a head coach, I would rather be in Tom Herman's shoes than Lincoln Riley's shoes, given what's on the roster. And frankly, look, we got to find out if these guys can really play, because everyone talks about how talented Texas's roster is. But as long as they're winning 5 or 6 games a year, then that doesn't really matter. I think the talent has to show up on the field. But look, Charlie Strong did a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of culture, changing the culture and getting some toughness back in that program. He brought the talent, and now Tom Herman, I think, has a chance to reap the benefits. But, you know, we'll dig into Texas a little bit more as we get into the podcast today, too.
All right, but before we get into the team-by-team breakdown of the win totals, I want to throw this question at you. You mentioned you're bullish on the Big 12. We're going to start our win totals at the top with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Who, beyond those two teams, the Bedlam rivals, do you think is going to be a surprise team? Like, who are the team, or maybe a couple of the teams that you are particularly bullish on? Because, you know, I said it before, every conference has good teams, every conference has bad teams, but your conference strength will ultimately be determined by the way that middle core is, and particularly how they play out of conference. Who do you like from the middle of that Big 12? Who do you think that maybe you are a little bit higher on than the public consensus?
Well, I'll give you, I mean, there's two, really three, probably. I mean, I think TCU is, no one is talking about TCU. We've almost all forgotten TCU after one down year last year. And I think that they, with Gary Patterson there as a head coach, he hadn't forgotten how to coach. And he's got a lot of players back. I think it's the most experienced team returning in the Big 12. They're going to be really good, I think. We just talked about Texas. Look, there's so much upside there right now. There is already. Doesn't take long. I think Texas has a ton of ceiling. And then Kansas State, which is another team people just sort of forget about nationally, But look, this is exactly the kind of team that Bill Snyder has won big with in the past. So there's those, but then, you know, quickly, I think Baylor has just hired one of the best coaches in college football. I think West Virginia maybe has one of the most important transfer injections with Will Grier. It, like, their quarterback situation last year was so mediocre, and now they've actually got a really good quarterback that Dana Holgorsen can work with. So I think it's right there. That's seven teams. And again, Baylor, this might not be the year, but I just think in general, it's an uptrending conference.
All right, let's get into it. Oklahoma, over-under win total. I will be using the updated Bovada numbers, Barton, so if you've got them pulled up, I'll call them out. We got 9.5. 9.5 for the Oklahoma Sooners. We have Baker Mayfield back, but where are the other options? Like, we lose Samaje Perine. We lose D.D. Westbrook. Like, there are an incredible lack of weapons on the offensive side. I think the defense is really talented, and I think that they're going to be solid. But you just mentioned 9 wins would be a disappointment. I think that they're expecting Oklahoma to be a 10-2 type team. And that includes, by the way, for the win total, they got to play Ohio State again. I feel really good about this under. I've got Oklahoma as a 9-3, and yeah, that's going to be tough for Lincoln Riley. But again, with the way the rest of the Big 12 is, I'm going under on 9.5.
Really? Wow, that's interesting. So, and the when you posted your story, Chip, earlier in the summer on win totals, it was at 10. So it's that number's actually moved down to 9.5. So Vegas is, it sounds like they're on your side of things, but God, when I was looking at this and I was thinking about this, in some ways, like, I was looking at it the other way in terms of why aren't more people talking about Oklahoma as a legitimate national title contender? I mean, I agree. Look, I think Ohio State, it's hard for me to see that being a win, especially when they're going to the shoe. But why not? I mean, they do have Baker Mayfield, and no one seems to be really talking about the fact that they've got, you know, a Heisman Trophy finalist, a guy that has to be considered one of the favorites to win it this year, and they've got pretty much everybody else back other than those running backs. And it's not like Lincoln Riley doesn't know how to manufacture some offense.
True.
You know, they've got a great offensive line back. I think they return every offensive line starter. They've got the big tight end, Mark Andrews. You know, they got another JUCO guy and Marquise Brown, who's sort of that sort of speed guy. Jeff Badet from Kentucky coming in. I just think offensively, there's no reason to even concern ourselves with that.
Ooh, like,
there's
no question. Okay. All right.
You know, like, Lincoln Riley's going to figure it out. Baker Mayfield's going to run around back there and get some points up on the board. And so I think this OU team, to me, has a chance to really, like, spoil the party, I guess, nationally. And look, I'll admit, coming into this thing, I was thinking, hey, you know, your national title contenders are Alabama, they're USC, Florida State, your Big Ten, you know, two or three. Didn't even think about OU. But as I dig into it a little bit more, I don't know, man. Like, I think that this is a team, like, I feel pretty good about getting to 10. I don't know. I don't see more than one loss the rest of the Big 12, but, you know, again, they do have to go to Oklahoma State. So it'll be, you know, it's hard for me to take the under. I'll put it that way.
Even at 9.5, it is juice to the over. Like, we're looking at a team that is expected to win about 10 games, no doubt. But, I mean, I see 4 games, and, you know, you just mentioned Matt Rhule at Baylor as you think one of the best coaches in college football. Like, I think that Oklahoma, after really running the Big 12 here for a hot minute, it just, you know how college football sometimes over the course of like 3 to 4 years, some teams just get got? Like, I look at Baylor, and I look at the shootout, the Red River shootout, and I look at Oklahoma State, and I'm like, man, I don't think it would, I mean, the Baylor one would be a huge upset, no doubt, but I think that at the end of the season, if we look back, you know, those are 4 games that I think are potential losses for the Oklahoma Sooners between Ohio State, Baylor, Oklahoma State and Texas, and that's like a that is too many dangerous spots for a first time ever head coach for me to feel like this team's going 10-2.
Yeah, and don't forget at Kansas State too.
That's Trap game. City. That's down Trap to City. Yeah, no way.
That's right after the Texas game. You know, there'll be a little bit of a letdown, maybe. Like you're right. I mean, this is in some ways this OU, and I think that speaks too to the, like I was talking about, the strength of the Big 12. I think they're the fact that you can look at the Big 12 conference, and you just don't, you feel like there's a lot of losable games there for OU. To me, tells you sort of where this conference is, but. I think they will be better on defense. I'm really excited to see Neville Gallimore and how he's developing a defensive tackle that I think is a stud. Ogbo Okoronkwo is maybe a first-round draft pick just because of his speed rush, like his pass rush ability off the edge.
You're a first-round draft pick for getting that pronunciation down right now. I mean, I feel like I don't give him enough love in like radio hits just because I get triggered.
You're intimidated by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So when I hear you talk about it, Chip, I'll admit, like it gives me a little pause to start like yelling about like maybe they could have a national title run, especially when I look at the Ohio State game and really, if no part of me is confident in picking OU in that game, but it's gonna be, I don't know, I wouldn't be shocked if this is a team that's heading into the playoffs at 12-1 after winning the Big 12 title game.
Ooh, yeah, we still got to. All right, so let's do Oklahoma State, the Bedlam rival first, and then maybe a little sidestep into Big 12 title game talk. Oklahoma State's over-under, we're looking at around 9 with a little bit of an even split here. This is a team that I was coming in like January. My early thoughts were, when Mason Rudolph and James Washington say they're going to come back, when I see sort of the vibe around Oklahoma State, it has that sort of 2011 type feel in terms of the confidence that is coming from Stillwater. And I was thinking, I was down on Oklahoma sort of early, and maybe that's sort of influencing what I'm thinking right now here in July, but I was thinking Oklahoma State or Kansas State. And now I'm feeling even better about my Oklahoma State pick. So because of that, I got to go over here. I think Oklahoma State, they're not going to go 12-0. Like, they're going to get tripped up somewhere. But by getting the Oklahoma game at home, I've got them winning the Big 12, and I've got them winning it thanks to like the tiebreaker that'll probably help them get into that Big 12 championship game. I'm going over on the regular season win total. I've got them 10-2 or better. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I'm a little bit worried about the defense. You know, they weren't that great defensively last year, and they've only got 5 guys coming back on that side of the ball. So, yeah, I don't know a whole lot about this defensive unit. No names jump off the page at me as guys that I just think are studs. But
Glenn Spencer ain't enough for you. You can't just put your faith in the old guy to figure something out. I mean, like look, the Pitt game might be basketball. You know, like there are going to be some games. Tulsa might be a basketball game. I mean, there are going to be some games that are going to be decided in the 40s and 50s, no doubt. But I just think with Rudolph and Washington, it's really tough for me to not think that they're going to be able to just outscore teams.
No, and look, I'm with you on that. I mean, so what I wrote down is if you're looking for this year's Washington in the playoffs, ooh, I mean, I think Oklahoma State's a candidate.
Yeah.
To me, I don't want to give too much of a spoiler in our Big Ten preview, but to me, if you're looking for, and there's, often there's that one team that nobody really saw coming, I'll pat myself on the back. I picked Washington in the playoffs preseason last year, but if you're looking for that Washington team this year, I think it's Oklahoma State, and I think Wisconsin could be another option for that pick, but Oklahoma State, it's all about those offense. I mean, that offense is going to be maybe the best offense in college football. And I saw actually at the Elite 11 this summer, Mason Rudolph throwing with Sam Darnold and a couple other quarterbacks as a counselor out there. And Matt, that dude's a tank. Like, he's a big,
he's a big dude.
Yeah, he's like got tree trunk legs and a thick upper body, and he's just like, he's the type of guy who's just such a talented passer. But he's going to have a couple Ben Roethlisberger moments where he shrugs off somebody and gets the ball to James Washington or Jalen McCleskey, and they just get going. So I can't wait to watch this team. But man, and hey, it's going to be a fun year to be an Oklahoma State fan, because like you said, I think they are going to have some basketball scores this year. And it's going to be, look, they got Oklahoma at home, which is huge. You know, they've got Kansas State at home. They've got TCU at home. To me, those are the teams. Like, those are the teams that are the biggest contenders in the Big 12. And to get all those teams at home, that counts for a lot. And so it's going to be a really interesting year. I'm with you. I would take the over. And hey, let's just put the chips on Glenn Spencer and say, go get it, big guy.
Okay.
See if you can get that defense rolling.
All right. So do you think that the Big 12 championship game will help or hurt the league's playoff chances?
Well, I think it'll help in the sense that if you got a team that's good enough to be in the playoffs, then I think that they'll figure out a way to get in now. I mean, I think that, like, it'll hurt if it's a bad conference. Like, if you don't have that top four team, I think that there won't be a deserving team out of the Big 12 that gets left out, if that makes sense.
Ooh, even if they lose. Yeah. But what if it's like the top team in the Big 12 in the top four loses the Big 12 championship game?
You know, I think, again, like,
is that too many hypotheticals? Is that,
well, no, it's, I mean, it's to me, like, this may not be the answer that Big 12 fans want to hear, but then to me, as a college football fan, maybe I'm looking at this from the wrong perspective, but then as a college football fan, then I'm like, well, that team wasn't a top four team anyways.
Ooh, so, yes. So hard ass.
I'm good with it. Like, I like it. I'm glad they've got it. So then now we can, as like national college football people, can look at it and say, all right, you know, Oklahoma, go win the Big 12 championship game now. And you know, that should be enough to get you in. Or if you can't win it, then you know what? We didn't need you anyways. Where are you at with it?
I think it's going to hurt the league overall. I thought that, or how about this? I think that it is not the right message for Bob Bowlesby to say that the conference championship game will help them get into the playoff, because for my money, it is about money. Like, I think it's a great opportunity for the league to capitalize on a weekend where everyone else gets to have their moment. You know, that last Saturday, that, and then, you know, for the Pac-12, they play it on Friday, but like, that last weekend is a showcase, is what it feels like. And like, you know, maybe it is for the playoff, because I've said before, like, we see the cameras of the playoff selection committee on that final weekend. They just sit around like a bunch of college football fans with like five TVs up and like all the sweet tea that you could ever want to have to drink, and just like sit around and take in football. And it's just not as impressive when your Big 12 champion is playing against Kansas than if they're playing against another like quality competition team.
Yeah, and don't tell me that if you roll up there and put, you know, like Ohio State did to Wisconsin a couple years ago, where you just roll somebody. I mean, those college football playoff folks are human. And I mean, they're going to be influenced by that. And so I agree with you in that it's like, it's a money play, but at the same time, it is an opportunity for the Big 12 to get what they deserve. Or not. Like, it's a good, you know.
Yeah, I like your side. That's something that nobody from the Big 12 is saying, is because nobody from the Big 12 wants to admit it. It's like, well, if they can't win the conference championship game, maybe they don't deserve a spot for the national championship.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think they do. And so it's going to be fun. I mean, I think for, again, as a college football fan, it gives us a better opportunity to make sure we've all got the right four in there. So I'm excited about it.
I like that take so much. I'll credit you as a way to plug our podcast, but just a heads up for like the next month and a half when people ask me about it, That's got to be the take. Well, you couldn't win it. Sorry, we didn't want you anyway.
That's right.
All right, let's go to Baylor. Let's see. I'm looking at Baylor with Matt Rhule. About 7.5, 8 wins. We're mixing it up. We're going to have fullbacks on the field. I think that 7-5 is not a disappointment. Do you think that we'll catch 8-4 for the Baylor Bears?
So what's our number here? Are we 7.5?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually wrote down 7 wins. I think it's a 7-win team this year. Just because there's some transition that's going to have to take place. I think they lose some games. Like they're probably a team that's capable of losing to a Texas Tech or an Iowa State or even a Kansas, but they're also capable of beating anyone in the conference as well. Like, I think they've got that sort of a spectrum. But this to me, I think Baylor's in great shape long term. I think that I'll say it again. To me, Matt Rhule is and I've never met Matt Rhule. I don't know him, but I've talked to other coaches who have either been around him or met him at clinics or, you know, just played against him. And he is, I think, you know, he is universally really well respected. He was really kind of the guy that, like, he could have been at Oregon if he wanted to, which is fascinating to me that he chose the Baylor gig instead. But that means he wants to be there. Like, he has a plan, a vision for this thing. And I think he's going to get it right. But you mentioned it, like, they're going to have tight ends and fullbacks in there. They're going to be switching to more of a pro style system. There's going to be some adjustments period here. And that means a little bit of winning some games you don't expect them to, and maybe losing a couple you don't expect them to as well. So I feel like 7 wins is about right. They've still got a lot of talent on offense. I still think their receiving core is really good. Their quarterback is probably good enough. And I really like their defensive coordinator too, and Phil Snow. But again, we just look at the rest of that conference, and if there's going to be an under somewhere, this is one of those that I feel like is, you know, I'd take the under on.
They've got some tough games early that I think will become good learning experiences. I'm with you. I'm going on the under, going 7 wins, but like the wins that are there, getting them later, I think will benefit this Baylor team. I think that, when they start to make the switch, when they start to really feel comfortable, all of a sudden here's Kansas, Texas Tech, Iowa State. Boom, boom, boom. 3 great opportunities to become bowl eligible, to get those 15 extra practices. Because, I called the Oklahoma game earlier, but like to your point, I could see them losing at Duke and then turning around and then getting like the Oklahoma upset the next week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, this is a different where you were so used to seeing Baylor just run through, like, sleepwalk to 6-0 with all their 1AA games and Big 12 cupcakes early in the season. And this year, you know, at Duke is a better game than we're used to seeing Baylor play early. Oklahoma and Kansas in weeks 4 and 5 Kansas State 4 and 5 is, I mean, those are tough matchups.
Those are losses. Yeah, those are losses in my book. And yeah, those are going to be, like, good lesson learning losses for Matt Rhule and this staff.
They'll be 3-2 or 2-3. They'll go into a bye week, and they'll probably get beat at Oklahoma State again. And so that's a, you know, as a start, they're what, 2-4 or 3-3. And I agree with you. And at that point, they'll know who they are. They'll find a little momentum, and then watch out if you're Texas, if you're TCU at the end of the season. I think that they could. This sets up. I like where you're going. Like, this sets up to be a team that maybe ends up 7-5, but man, they're feeling great heading into bowl season. They're so their confidence is sky high heading into the bowl practices and heading into the 2018 season. And then I think they're off and running.
All right. I am with you on Gary Patterson didn't forget how to coach. And we've referenced the old coaching rankings before. And Gary Patterson's sort of one of those, like, perma top 10 coaches in my book. I just think that when it comes to coaching the game of football to young people, there are just very few people in the country who do it better than Gary Patterson, and certainly he's even got the body of work to back that up over his career at TCU. Now, 7.5 is the number here. It might have been 8 before because it's juiced right now to the over. So we're looking at like a 7-8 win season for the Horned Frogs. But Barton, you say that you're pretty confident here, and I wanna like other than Gary Patterson, you know, where's the real confidence coming from? Because I don't have TCU totally figured out. I think that they'll be able to get the win. I think they'll be able to start 3-0, no doubt. But depending on how you feel about West Virginia, things could get a little bit tougher down the stretch.
Well, the one question here, like if TCU had a quarterback that we really liked, then I think we would be, I mean, confidence would be sky high. But I don't know how much we can really, or how much I can at least really fully get behind Kenny Hill. Like if they had a quarterback, if they, you know, brought in a JUCO, like a Gerard Evans type of JUCO transfer, though I don't know how, you know, Kenny Hill may be kind of about what Gerard Evans was, but if they had brought in somebody here,
Gerard Evans is a better decision, was a better decision maker than Kenny Hill.
That's probably correct. Yeah, yeah. But so if they had someone like that, if they had a Jarrett Stidham that was coming off of a transfer sitting out year, you know, then I think this is like one of those teams you throw in there with a Wisconsin or Oklahoma State as a dark horse playoff team. But look, they returned 10 starters on offense. They've been really good offensively. Sonny Cumbie is Doug Meacham's gone. Sonny Cumbie's still there. Sonny Dykes is there as like an off-field analyst, like just hanging out, just you know, drawing
true.
Up plays. In the,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's worth mentioning, no doubt.
Sitting in the film room, you know, 18 hours a day or whatever they're doing. So I think offensively they're going to be good, just based on their history there right now and recently. Kevontae Turpin's one of the most exciting players in the country. They've got receivers. Kyle Hicks is plenty good enough to be that spread back that can be the counterpuncher. And then defensively, look, I don't think Gary Patterson is going to have a stretch of bad defenses. And they're really good in the secondary. That's a good place to be in the Big 12. That's a good strength to have. And we're 2 years removed from 11-2. We're 3 years removed from 12-1. For some reason, and I don't know what it is, but like last year's season felt like it was like a 3-year stretch for TCU. I we've just sort of forgotten that they can be really good.
Yeah.
And I just think there's not like a bunch of household names on this roster, but it's still, I think that they've just based on being just your typical anonymous TCU tough team. I really just and having visions of a lot of big wins for this squad.
Oh man, TCU's reputation got punched in the face by Trevone Boykin at the hotel bar and still hasn't gotten up.
That's a great call. That is exactly what happened. Yeah,
like I don't know, man. There were so many times last season where I felt like I was down. I feel like I was watching the TCU game as like my third screen. And you would just be like, what the hell right. are they doing right now? It's, hey, right. do you guys see what's going on over here? And that's obviously a team that has sort of struggled to find itself offensively. And I think a lot of that does come from the quarterback position in Kenny Hill. I'm gonna go under. That's, you know, we talked about there's got to be some unders there. I'm feeling some other teams a little bit more. One of them being – go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, no, I think the – one thing you do have to keep in mind, and one thing that hurts them, I think, is they're at Oklahoma State, they're at Kansas State, they're at Oklahoma, they're at Arkansas. I think, you know, the schedule doesn't set up great for them to win some of the games that they need to win to be in that top tier of the conference. So I don't think an over is going to be an easy pull here, but I'm really reluctant, I guess, to bet against Gary Patterson this is the most experienced team in the Big 12 coming back. And so to me, that counts for something. And Kenny Hill has shucked the Kenny Trill name, yeah. And he's all about the business now. And so, hey, I'm gonna kind of roll the dice with them. I think
Kansas State. You mentioned it earlier. Got one of those teams where they might be able to get in there and make some noise. You're bringing Jesse Ertz, senior quarterback. Ertz is the starter here, right? Like, we're not going to go through any quarterback shuffling.
Oh, no. This is the guy. This is like Bill Schneider to a T. Like, this
2012
is,
Colin Klein type
we're
stuff.
We're in Colin Klein territory right now, brother. Yeah, I think he's the guy.
A manageable schedule. I mean, like, the Vanderbilt game, like, I love Derek Mason. You're right there in Nashville. You might have a different read on this, but I got K-State there. So I think we're looking at a pretty strong start. You get West Virginia at home. You get Oklahoma at home. You get TCU at home. The over-under, according to the latest Bovada numbers, were at 8. I've got Kansas State as a 9-win team. I'm going over.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the math on, like, where I'm at right now with my picks and whether these all, like, match up and are feasible, but I'm kind of with you on the over, too. You know, this is a lot of overs for me in the Big 12, but I think, to me, this is the best K-State team since Bill Snyder was risen and returned to bring them back to glory. Like, this is going to be one of his best teams, I think. And, you know, this is the Jesse Ertz squad. And as long as he stays healthy, I mean, this is going to be one of those squads where, like, hey, like, it's third and 12. And you're like, well, this is a punt situation. Like, there's no ways they can pick up 12 yards, but then Jesse Ertz, like, scrambles and stiff arms somebody and gets a big gain, and it doesn't seem like he can throw from you know, me to you, but he can somehow figure out a way to pick up third downs. I like them figuring this thing out, and I think, to me, the one question, the one concern I have is when these older coaches start to, like, when they hit the wall or when they go over the edge, like, they plummet and they, like, all of a sudden, like, have lost their marbles. And I got a little sense, like, just a little taste that is Bill Snyder kind of starting to get to that point when, you know, A, he's had some health issues.
Right.
B, like, when they wouldn't let, I'm blanking on the name now, the wide receiver transfer.
Oh, Sutton, right?
Yes. Yep. Corey Sutton from North Carolina, I think. You know, when he wouldn't let him transfer, like, he wouldn't give him a release to anywhere, and then he basically told the media that he doesn't believe in letting anybody transfer when they haven't, you know, because what precedent would that set? And, oh, by the way, he's failed drug tests, and just sort of started babbling about all this sort of privacy information. To me, that was like, okay, whoa, where are we in Joe Paterno territory? Are we in Bobby Bowden territory? Like, are we in, like, did he take a turn for the worse here? And so I think he's definitely on the back nine here. But I think, you know, is this the last year? Is next year the last year? So in some ways, as long as he doesn't actually kind of get to the back end of that hill, I think this is a really good team. But I don't know, do you think Bill Snyder's still still all there as a, how old are we at now?
80,
mid-80s, right?
Yeah. I think that this team might be it, and we'll see it, and, like, whether this team is able to, because there is endearing curmudgeon where it's like, oh we love him, he's such an old curmudgeon type thing, but then there's like, man, that was a really mean thing to do to, like, right, a young dude. And that's right. That's what I got from that. And we'll see, like, if this Kansas State team is not able to secure, like, at least a good win or so to give the players, like, it's a good vibe and good confidence by the middle of the season. I could see November getting ugly, but I've just got money on, like you said, calling a zone read on third and 12 and then just watching them somehow convert.
Well, and I guess also the other flip side of the Bill Snyder thing is maybe by mid season, maybe they start out 5-0, beat Central Arkansas, Charlotte, Vandy, Baylor, and Texas. And then there start to be just a little buzz, maybe not publicly, but just in the locker room. Hey, this is Coach Snyder's last year. Like, we got to go do this for him. And then the beef of their schedule hits, and they're, you know, they're really ultra motivated, and this is like that swan song for him. So I could see it. This is going to be I think a fun team to watch.
All right, Texas Longhorns. 7.5 is the number, and the big number for me is like all of the yards that Deonta Foreman had that are now gone. Like, there is, we're going Shane Buechele entrenched at quarterback, you think?
Oh, yeah. I think he's got a little Colt McCoy in him. I think he's got some real special intangibles.
What do you think about Sam Ellinger?
So I think he's a gamer. I think he's a good player. I don't like him as much as Shane Buechele.
Ooh.
They're different players in the sense, like, one thing I have concerned about with Shane Buechele is, and I don't know where he's at physically right now, but he's a little bit of a more slender built guy. He's, you know, if he takes a bunch of hits, I don't know how well he's going to be able to stand up. So I think, and you know, the flip side of that, Sam Ellinger is like he's almost looks like a linebacker back there playing quarterback. He's 6'2", he's like 215. 220. He's just this stocky, thick kid that has a lot of, you know, less of a sudden version of Johnny Manziel. He's more of like but he can, you know, he can extend plays and scramble and make throws in a lot of different areas. But I think, to me, it's Shane Buechele's team. He's, you know, he's getting great reviews in the offseason. He's a special leader. And I think he's going to really be able to operate this offense really well. And I don't know. Like, I talked to a coach at Texas during the fall last year and was like, this guy, Deonta Foreman, is really special. Like, he's one of the unique backs we've ever had here. And yet, to me, in some ways, I don't know. I mean, he was big and fast. But I think the fact that he was drafted, you know, mid rounds in the NFL tells you that he's not, in the NFL's eyes, some like crazy unique talent. To me, Chris Warren has a lot of the same qualities. I mean, he's another 250-pound back. He's also really fast when healthy. You know, that offense last year just sort of, I mean, it was a great offense to operate in as a running back, and I think they'll be able to get Chris Warren going this year too. So I'm not super worried about the loss of Deonta Foreman. To me, it's about just is all this talent that Texas has been accumulating. Are they going to like nut up and live up to some of their rankings? Like, stop living off your rankings, guys. Like, it's time to actually play. Nothing bothered me more than last year when all these guys were like bitching and moaning about, you know, their coach getting fired. It's like, well, look, go beat Kansas and you don't have to worry about that. So, you know, I'm ready for these Texas guys to start playing to their ability, which I think is really significant. But I think Tom Herman's the kind of guy that can get them to do that, though.
So, like, on the defensive side, where you've got guys like Anthony Wheeler, Malik Jefferson, Edwin Freeman, like these guys that had high ratings coming in, they've been on the field for a couple of seasons, but they've been a part of defenses that, you know, while very good according to their ratings, are not being able to help team success. Like, is that a side of the ball that you think can be a strength for the Longhorns this fall?
It should be, but I still don't know that we can have confidence that it is. I mean, they're returning 10 guys, but their secondary is a bunch of X4 stars and they just get toasted. And I think they'll be better this year. They've got some experience and everything, but again, like, Malik Jefferson is a great example. He's all over the first round mock drafts, early mock drafts. But, you know, when you read our Texas site on 24/7 Sports, you know, Bobby Burton, one of the insiders over there, is saying that Malik Jefferson sort of, you know, hasn't quite won over the new staff yet. Like, they want more out of him. They're not satisfied with the way he's playing. And so You know, he's in no way, I think, trending to be a first-round pick based on what we're hearing inside Texas. And so Gary Johnson's a unique guy. He's a JUCO guy that's like a legitimately at linebacker is like a 4.3, 4.4 speed guy. So he'll be flying around, and maybe he can provide some presence defensively. I do really like Malcolm Roach. I think he's a football player. I really like Brecken Hager. He's a football player. That's who they need. They need some of these tough guys who are just football players, as opposed to these rare talents who maybe don't, you know, haven't shown they've got the toughness. So I think Texas has got to find an edge. Is the bottom line.
Bunch of combine stars is what I'm hearing.
Kinda, I think maybe, yeah. And I think Tom Herman has got to, you know, that's, I think Tom Herman understands that they've got to find an edge. And, but golly, Chip, I mean, this is a roster that should be able to compete for a Big 12 title. But I just, you know, are they? I don't know. It's just fascinating to see what's going to happen. Cause as we talked about a lot, I mean, this Big 12, there's not a lot of easy games in it. So I'll be really interested to see what this team looks like.
All right. So over under was at 7.5. Are you over?
I'm inclined to say over at 8, but you know what? I'm just going to go under. I'm going to say 7. I'm going to say just, you know, they're 5-7 the last 2 years. I think a two win bump in Tom Herman's first year is probably reasonable. Even as talented as this team is, I'm a little more bullish on a few of the other teams in the Big 12. So I'm going to go 7-5 for me. Where you got it?
I got over, but I've got a very specific prediction. I think they're 8-4. I think they beat Oklahoma because it was like Tom Herman at Houston always won the big game, but then had like one game or two games where Houston really shouldn't have lost, you know? So it was like when Tom Herman got hired, we're like, well, we know that guy's going to win Red River and lose to Kansas State. like, chalk it up. That guy loves to get his team up for the big games. You know, Houston beat Oklahoma. Houston beat Louisville. But, man, they would get out there and lose to somebody else in the American. So I got him at 8-4, but it's going to be a rocky 8-4 is what I think.
You know what I could see happening, too? So, like, they start 2-1, lose to USC. I tell you what's a tricky game is Thursday night in Ames, Iowa.
Oh, like, boy.
Look, man, I want to go to a weeknight game at Iowa State. I mean, that's for a team that's traditionally really bad, watching those like weeknight games at Iowa State on TV, that atmosphere looks awesome.
Do they have any Sam Richardsons left? Sam B. Richardson, or wasn't that the dude's name?
We'll talk Iowa State, but they've got some tricky players out there that can, I think, figure out a way to make things interesting. I think that's an interesting game. But then here's what I was getting to. Then they go Kansas State, Oklahoma State, two of those games at home. And then there's your game that they, you know, they beat Oklahoma, and then they end up losing to Baylor at Baylor, you know, in a sort of a mediocre year for Baylor. So that's a tough stretch to follow up with a tough Baylor team on the road and then a tough TCU team on the road. So it's just, I don't know. I think this is going to be an interesting team to watch. I think if this could potentially be one of the most exciting, fun teams in college football, though, because I think Shane Buechele is really likable. They've got a big 250-pound back. They've got a slot receiver in Devin DuVernay, who's like a 10, 200-meter guy, like one of the fastest players in the country, but he's like 5'10". And then they have Colin Johnson on the outside, who's like 6'6", 220. And I don't know, so it's just all these almost just sort of free – it's like a carnival out there. It's like these freak show athletes. And if they can just get something going, this could catch fire and be one of the teams that the whole, you know, all of college football gets excited about. But look, I'm just at this point with Texas, like, I'm just ready for them to prove it.
Dennis Dodd wrote this week that West Virginia might have one of the most potent offensive attacks in the country. You mentioned Will Grier as one of the most impactful transfers around. This West Virginia over under, I'm looking at it right now at 7 on Bovada, juiced a little bit to the over. So we're talking like a 7-5, 8-4 type season for Dana Holgorsen. What's like? Are you? Do you think that the arrival of Will Grier is going to be impactful enough to make the Mountaineers at least like last year until that snow game against Oklahoma, we were taking them real seriously. You know, they were jumping up in the rankings. They put a bunch of wins together. Do you think that they're going to have at least that kind of season again where you've got to take them seriously as a threat in the Big 12?
I mean, I thought Skyler Howard last year at quarterback was pretty like bottom of the barrel. I mean, obviously he could operate that offense, but in terms of just like a physical tool set, he didn't bring much to the table to me. So, you know, when I was looking at this team, I was like, all right, Will Grier, you know, if Will Grier's on last year's team, man, they could have been. And then I looked and like, I mean, they were 10-3. They, you know, how much better could they have gotten? I guess maybe they could have gone like 12-1.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't going to beat Oklahoma with Will Grier. So, to me, that tells me a couple things. One, I think that Tony Gibson is the real deal as a defensive coordinator. They lose a ton on defense, but I think they're going to figure some things out and be pretty serviceable defensively. And I think that Will Grier on offense, I think, is going to totally change things for them. I think they're going to be a lot more explosive in the run game because of what teams are going to have to do to defend Will Grier in the pass game. Justin Crawford's going to have a big year. They've still got really talented receivers. I don't know. I think this is 7 wins sounds about right to me. But again, when I look at them getting 10 wins last year, again, the Big 12's improved. So it's hard to really compare this year and last year. But for them to get 10 wins last year and then for them to me probably be a better offense and still probably be okay on defense, it's while 7 wins looks right, it's still hard for me to like subtract, I guess it would have, except 3 wins from their regular season total. So I'm at 7, but man, I feel like I may be selling them short a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to go push 7 as well. 7-5 sounds right. I think I give Jim McElwain and Doug Nussmeier a lot of credit for some of the success that we saw Will Grier have during those first 6 games at Florida. Is that unfair? Like, is that totally misguided?
Well,
because let's give the
Mexican creatine some credit too. I think he was always a really talented thrower. He was just a 170-pound kid or whatever, and as he got stronger and bigger, which was going to happen, I just think he gave it a little bit of a juiced it up a little bit. As he got bigger and stronger, he was going to be that guy at quarterback. And I think I'll give them some credit, but I think he's a really, really talented kid. And I don't think that they created him. I think he's like, as a thrower in high school, I remember him like he was special.
Oh, well, and what, were they playing 8-on-8? That little small school out there in Davidson County? Oh, man, hey, come on.
Hey, that's real football now, but he was putting up some ridiculous numbers. And, hey, like, they always throw out big-time numbers at that school, but I've seen through the guys at that school that haven't had the unique talent, and I think he does have it. And then when you watch the spring game this year, he looked really good. Like, I'm giving the guy too much credit, but I think Will Grier is a dude at quarterback.
Nice. I'm a public school kid in the state of North Carolina. I'm just hating. I'm just totally just hating. Like, I talk trash to all of my friends that are at North Raleigh Christian Academy. Like all the 8-man football in the state of North Carolina. Just talk a lot of trash. I'm like, until you're playing against Dexter Lawrence at Wake Forest, come talk to me.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. But hey, he played against those dudes in the SEC, and you looked
true.
All right.
That's
so,
true. That's
you
true.
You know, I still think he's going to be a baller. And David Sills is back from his quarterback experiment and looked really good in the spring game too. So, Javon Durante and Greg Jennings, and I mean, he's got some guys to throw to. Ah, man, I think that they got a chance to have some another really good offense. I feel like I'm loving up every Big 12 team in some ways, though. So I should probably tone it down. But I think that Will Grier is the real deal.
All right. Well, the good news is that we've gotten to some teams that I'm not super high on. So I think that the over-under balance is going to be brought into check here. Iowa State, 5.5. Texas Tech, 5.5. Let's talk about these two before we get to the Kansas Jayhawks. Will Texas Tech ever field a defense, in your opinion, under Cliff Kingsbury?
It's amazing to think about Cliff Kingsbury heading into this season and like trying to find a way to be optimistic about his defense.
I can't.
Just like, it's funny to me. Like, what must he be thinking right now? Like, oh my God, like how, like in some way he's figured out, I'm sure he's spun this and like, they had a good spring practice or something, and he's probably like figured out a way to think these guys are have got a shot. But I don't know, man. Like I don't know where they're going to stop anybody again this year. I see a bunch of basketball scores again, and you know, while Nick Szymanek is probably the next Cliff Kingsbury pupil that's going to put up stupid numbers, I feel like they're in deep waters right now with the rest of the Big 12.
At 5.5, I'm going under. 5-7 for the Red Raiders.
Yeah, which probably means that Cliff Kingsbury is looking for a job next year. And you know that in Lubbock, that's not something they want to do. Like, they want Cliff Kingsbury to be the guy. And I want him to be the guy. How fun would that be for Cliff Kingsbury to continue, like, to turn Texas Tech into a power? But at this point, like, I don't know how you can have much confidence that it's going to happen.
Iowa State at 5.5. All right. So you mentioned Iowa State's got some players that you like. This is a team where, like, I think that there's a, like, Matt Campbell, very good coach. Like, we know that Matt Campbell is a good coach, and they've got, like, weirdly some good skill position talent, and from what we saw from him at Toledo, I think I like Iowa State. You know, as we've got to sort of slide teams up and down, I think I like Iowa State more than Texas Tech. I think I might like Iowa State as a bowl team.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah,
jumping on that. Okay, Cyclone bandwagon. So to me it's about, I do have faith in, I do like Matt Campbell as a coach. I mean, they were 3-9 last year. I think 5-7 sounds right this year. So I'm on the under. What's the number? 5.5.
Yeah.
So I'm on the under, but I sort of see this team as they lose a lot of, you know, most of their games, I guess you'd say, but they're also that team. That's,
oh, they're
going to
be in a lot of games.
They're going to be in a lot of games, and they're going to pull at least one like big upset, you know, maybe two. Like, they're going to sneak in some big upsets over the course of the year. I just think that they're just not good enough yet. I think the rest of the Big 12 is good, is just better than right now, and I think they will get there to where they're really competing regularly in this conference, but I just don't know they're yet. You know, Jacob Park at quarterback is good. I don't know. I think he's okay. Like, this isn't a Will Grier type transfer to me.
No.
Both their running backs, David Montgomery, Mike Warren. I mean, I think both those guys are good. And then Alan Lazard is
stud. I mean,
yeah, that dude's a player. You got a quarterback playing middle linebacker and Joel Landing. So, like, there's some intrigue to this team. I think they'll be fun to watch. I think they'll be fun to cheer for and kind of root for some upsets. But I just, man, where are you seeing them dig up those six wins? Like, right, go through the schedule and point out the six.
Here we go. Six wins. You got to start with, I'm going to give them a decent shot against Iowa. I think they get Northern Iowa. I think they definitely get Akron. I'll give them a decent shot against Iowa. I think they take an L against Texas. I think they take an L against Oklahoma. Big confidence-building victory against Kansas. We're talking like maybe a 20-point win. I think they can get Texas Tech. I think they take an L against TCU. They probably take an L in Morgantown. And I think that between Baylor and Kansas State, they'll ruin someone's late-season push.
On the road. But all right, so here's, if they're going to go to a bowl, And look, I don't think it's crazy to think that, but if they're going to go to a bowl, to me, which is sort of exciting and fun to think about, I think that means they beat Texas at home on a Thursday night.
Oh, that one's okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, that's the one for sure.
And so that's like that would be just for college football and just for like drama purposes. Like I don't know, that would be kind of fun to see.
I mean, isn't that the narrative of like college football? Is like brand name Texas goes into Ames on a Thursday night and loses, and like college football fans are just high fiving everywhere.
Circle the game, everybody. Like I think that's one to watch. There's gonna be that whole crowd is gonna be all in that like bright like gold and it's gonna, I don't know, that'll be one I'm anxious to see.
All right, bringing it home, we got Kansas 3. That's sad. I don't know what to say about Kansas football. Are we like
no, let's talk about Kansas football. This is like, I'm a geek, but man, like Kansas sort of has me I think they're gonna win 3 games. I think they're gonna go over. But like for some reason, I've never been like this excited to see what a 3-win team looks like.
Nice.
I mean, they've got the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year on defense in Dorrance Armstrong.
Oh, their defensive line in general is pretty sick.
Pretty good defensive line. They got this kid Mike Lee who should have been in high school last year, that like middle of the summer decided he was going to graduate early and go to Kansas, who was really good as a freshman. He's playing safety. He's a sophomore now. You know, they've got Doug Meacham in there now as their offensive coordinator, who was just like a steal from TCU. I mean, people have been trying to hire him as a head coach, and now all of a sudden David Beatty's getting him as an offensive coordinator. And then they've got an offense that's got a bunch of Alabama and A&M rejects. I mean, you know, LaQuiviante Gonzalez is the Texas A&M transfer. Daylon Charlotte is the Alabama transfer. Both those guys at receiver. Charles Baldwin, who some people thought was going to walk in and start last year as a JUCO transfer for Alabama, he didn't. You know, he transferred to Kansas and has a chance to start. Don't get me wrong. Like I don't think this is some team that's going to make a run for a bowl. But I think David Beatty's on the right track at Kansas.
But you think it's 3-9?
I kind of feel like it's a 3-9, but I think also this is a similar to Iowa State. I think they play a lot of teams close, and look, they got Texas last year. I mean, don't be shocked if they get it. You know, if they pick somebody off again this year, and I think that everybody that plays Kansas has to like actually watch that game now. You can't just sort of, you know, check the score and you're up 30 and keep on drinking beer. Like you better pay attention because Kansas will sneak up on you.
All right, so. With a rebooted offense, including the offensive coordinator and some playmakers, they can put up points. They've got a disruptive defensive line. But, boy, in a league where they pass as much as they do, they are – I don't know what to think about that secondary. Looks pretty green to me.
Okay. My man Mike Lee, he's the returning starter. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, they got some guys that don't have a ton of experience. But I do like the one guy that
Mike
I'm sort
Lee.
Of familiar with there. But – The one other Kansas note that I got to mention too, just about the general like uptick arrow up in the program, is they're recruiting really well right now.
Nice.
They're 33rd in the country right now.
How in the hell is that happening?
Rankings. They've and a big part of it, you know, that kid Mike Lee's from Louisiana. They've got a coach Tony Hull, who used to be a high school football coach in New Orleans. He's absolutely crushing it in the state of Louisiana, particularly in New Orleans. Like they've got a bunch of guys committed, several guys committed out of Louisiana that are you know, picking Kansas over a bunch of SEC and Big 12 schools. There's some things working right now at Kansas. Like I don't know what they're doing, what they're putting in the water, like what those visits are looking like that's getting these kids so excited, but I think they've got some believers out there, and to me, that trickles up to the rest of the team. Like if they're, you know, generating that much belief on the recruiting trail, then I feel like that's got to be something that comes from, you know, those guys talking to the players on the roster, those guys, you know, being around the team, and seeing that there's some belief in those guys' eyes too. So I think David Beatty is a guy that's quietly doing one of the better jobs out there in college football.
Wow, bringing a whole bunch of the New Orleans metro area talent to your team has never really hurt. Like, no. That's a pretty good pipeline to open. That's awesome. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. That's the best way to guarantee that you don't miss a single episode, including some special guests that we will be rolling out here in the next couple of weeks. We will continue with our season previews, and then you'll start to hear even more voices on here. Barton, man, a lot of fun. This is you're the only guy that can do it that well. I appreciate it.
No, man, this is great. Let's we'll talk again here soon.